You're listening to Yale Radio WYBC. This is Brainerd Carey with the lives of the artists, architects, curators, and more.
Today on our show, I'm talking with Karen Balin. Karen, thanks so much for talking with me today.
Thank you.
Karen, we're going to be talking about your book, Blackfishing the IUD, today, and you're going to read from it. I know that you are also, of course, professor and involved in different kinds of programming. So before we talk about that book and you read from it, is there anything you want to say that's related to that book in terms of your activities as a professor at MCLA that perhaps gives context to the book or in any way helps to support the book?
Sure, yeah, there's a really interesting connection there. I'm an assistant professor of creative writing at the Massachusetts College of Liberal Arts, which is in the wonderful town of North Adams in the Berkshires. And I began my work there as my book, I was preparing for this book, Blackfishing the IUD, to come out, which is all about gendered medical gaslighting. And I think that the kind of ideal life of a professor, if we can even dare to dream of those, that sort of thing anymore, is one where you're working not like above your students, but really working with your students and alongside, and that they are kind of becoming your work in all these ways, or working it almost like ahead of you, and you're just like looking. And so I got to really involve them in this publication. I had 6 students at MCLA who ended up producing the podcast that accompanies my book, which has the same name, Blackfishing the IUD, and is available at every podcast place. And they ended up completely, you know, we had an executive producer, Claire Mullen, who is a wonderful producer. And then these 6 interns at MCLA ended up doing so much of the legwork to design and engineer these episodes and became so integral to the project. So that's sort of an example of how we start to kind of fold things in. We had events and panels and readings at MCLA, all kind of thinking about gendered medical gaslighting. I teach courses on it. So it's all kind of a piece. And I think that, you know, that's sort of the goal, but everything kind of works together like that.
So let's hear from the book. You have the book near, and you're going to read a section before we begin discussing. Is that correct?
Yeah, I would love to. And I feel that I probably should give a little context. So this book, Blackfishing the IUD, specifically talks about the copper IUD, which the intrauterine device, which is a very popular birth control device that is made out of copper and is inserted into the uterus. My story is that this device made me incredibly ill. And when it did, I stumbled upon a world of people with uteruses who also were suffering because of this quite celebrated device. It felt pretty controversial to talk against it. It's really upheld as a feminist device, and I am a feminist. But the reality of what it's doing to a lot of women is pretty harrowing. And so this is the first book published to talk about the negative effects of this device. And I would just say that it's very hard to hold that a device such as this one that's designed, it would seem, to allow for female agency is also potentially harming women. But my argument is that it's precisely because the IUD occupies this site of politic, of even like celebration, and really that's like of ideology, that we have to be extra vigilant about its actual earthy and material effects. And this is a book that sort of holds that complication, that this is, you know, something that we really want to work and that we'd like to celebrate, but the reality is that there's large, large, large communities of women who are saying, this made me really sick. So this is an excerpt that I'll read that comes up later in the book. that's a little bit more elegiac. Some of the book has a little bit more of a scientific tone, and there's also stories from other women. It's a collaboratively written book, but this is sort of a little bit more of an elegiac tone, nearer to the end of the book. I guess one thing you should know is that what happened with me is that the IUD triggered autoimmunity in me, which is quite common, and I have rheumatoid arthritis, which is an autoimmune disease. The moon is hollow. The moon is hollow, says a certain contingent of people, because of aliens. And also, the moon has experienced bangs on its surface that have apparently made it ring just like a bell. These people are conspiracy theorists, paranoid, conclusive, certain, too certain. They connect the dots with their eager, enormous chalk. They want something to be true. They want, I think, something new to be true. And they are taken, as I am, with the moon being like a bell, two phonemes, moon, bell, beautiful, and struck across each other's false armor, mutable and beautiful. The moon is a bell, as the theorist Georges Bataille in 1931 said, the sun is an anus. He was arguing about the beauty, the absolute energy of the copula. The verb to be is the vehicle of amorous frenzy, he wrote. The moon is a bell, and I believe this absolutely sure. The IUD is the RA. The sexual force of the verb is to be, of my verbaceous being, will knock any noun into the moon and beyond. Everything is a parody, can be anything. The moon is hollow and made of mule skin. The moon is hollow insofar as it is coated with the agglutinant, the shining coat of a limit. I cannot go into the moon with my eyesight. I can't enter my womb from that time in November 2015 and sit cross-legged by the device at the base of its suspending embedding in the oaty red fist of my uterus and watch the metal loam off its rigid cross branch and leach into tissues and activate or reanimate, flare or push over my problem. I can't spy the center of the inception or the core of my being. I only know the timing. My health deteriorated rapidly after it was in, and I know how horrible it is to cease planning for trips, outings, applications, or children, waiting and watching for how bad and how soon, and that the moon is hollow.
Thank you.
And that's it.
thanks so much. That's beautiful writing. And of course, very engaging to kind of think about everything that you're exploring there. So to begin with, in talking about the book, where you're drawing from this very personal experience of getting ill, right? That's the genesis of this in doing your own research on what was happening to you, because was it something that was brought to your attention right away? Oh, it's the IUD, or was this something that you had to figure out and discover?
Oh, it's definitely one of those moments where, you know, we don't start thinking until something happens, right? That causes us to start thinking. So it was very much that, you know, I had the IUD. I was a very kind of serious, severe case, kind of an extraordinary case of it, where after 6 days, only 6 days with it in, I was severely ill and got it out in an emergency, and then shortly after that began experiencing some very serious health issues in the weeks that followed.
Obviously after it was out, in other words.
Yeah. So that's a really big part of sort of these communities, which are very much online, these communities of people conferring about what happened to them. And what happens with the IUD, I mean, it inflames, it causes inflammation, local inflammation, which might set off a chain inflammatory response. But it also, there's a copper toxicity piece to this. And so a lot of people who confer about becoming ill on the with the IUD in these communities, which are, by the way, you know, there will be one Facebook group that has like 20,000 people in it. I mean, these are large, large communities of people conferring. Is that the copper toxicity isn't something that's removed when you remove the device. You know, that is something that has, you know, leached into your tissues. That is something that, you know, you're still dealing with. So women who have the device taken out experience effects of this device for a long time afterwards, depending on how poisoned they became because of the copper load. But yeah, so that's my story, that I became incredibly ill, and there's nothing like something happening to you to make you turn on and start thinking and start needing to make connections.
And that's where the gaslighting comes in, to talk about that a little bit, that term here. That's part of what's happening through the industry or through, because I imagine that's partly what these groups are talking about is, I imagine, support, but also getting the facts out there and challenging the industry that creates this and encourages its use. Is that correct?
Sure. Yeah. I mean, the device industry is very powerful. A wonderful documentary to check out. I believe it's on Netflix. It's called The Bleeding Edge. And it doesn't talk about the IUD in particular, but it talks about different devices. And, you know, this isn't just an IUD issue. The metal and plastics in different devices. There's communities of people around a lot of devices because these are materials that are hurting people. So the IUD is kind of one example. But absolutely, you know, there's a long history of women not being believed or heard in the doctor's office. It's sort of rooted right into the birth of the medical profession, the westernized medical profession. And, you know, many, many people who identify as women experience such harming, you know, gaslighting when they are trying to work out issues with their doctors. It's really a site of trauma for so many, so many.
So let's talk about that, because that's also what I would imagine is, you know, such a powerful force in your book, in your thinking, in this community. But let's talk a little bit, you know, about that, because that seems so kind of insidious and hard to gather data on, yet there it exists. There's a history of it. So I guess I want to ask, how is that battled or dealt with? I suppose it's education. I mean, I remember hearing my first experience with knowing how doctors kind of manipulate is, I remember going to it was a birthing class with my wife, and it was in a really cool birthing center in New York, and they were saying, you know, when you're giving birth, the doctor might say to you something like, your labor is not very effective. And she said, how does that make you feel? Right? What do you think mm-hmm. about that? You know, and it was these kind of ideas and these terms that you realize were manipulative. And you know, I've encountered it again in different ways, but it was kind of like, wow, you know, this is how cesareans were, essentially what they were saying was, this is why cesareans are performed at a much higher rate in the U.S., for example, than anywhere else, because of what the doctors want and what they're convincing you that you want or whatever. So I would imagine it's similar, though even more kind of cruel in a way, because you have somebody in tremendous pain and a kind of toxic shock.
That's an amazing story. I mean, I I think that it, and that story illustrates how much it's like, it's sort of funny. That's like on the other spectrum, right? That's not about birth control. That's about birth. And, but it's like, no matter where you're hitting it, you know, you're going to get it. And so it's,
you mean
so,
you're going to get the kind of gaslighting, the kind of manipulation,
yeah, sure,
in the doctor's office, it's, of, it's not what you think. You don't know what you're, what's going
it's
on
not
with your body kind
to,
of thing.
Birth control, it's you know, it's like it's across, you know, and then of course becoming an autoimmune patient, which, you know, most most commonly affects women, and you know, and then that's like autoimmune disease is so nefarious, so like it's just like it, or like it becomes this, like, you know, it takes women a very long time to get diagnosed because they're not really believed or treated like they're hysterical. So there's, you know, there's just like these histories come up everywhere. And, you know, one of my big trauma stories, which I talk about in Blackfishing, I guess I had experienced medical gaslighting throughout my life, as I think many people do. But it was so acute in this situation because there's such a celebration of this device, this belief in this device, and just like an inability to hear women, hear what's going on. But for me, I was so sick on it that I, in a very emergency fashion, showed up at my gynecologist's office asking for her to remove it, really sick. And it took a while for them to, which is very common. Women have a hard time convincing professionals to remove the device very frequently. And sometimes they refuse, right? And I had to insist. And when my gynecologist, I was very ill. I was terrifying. But my gynecologist didn't seem to notice that. She removed the device very begrudgingly, and then she showed it to me. It had only been inside of me for 6 days. So she showed it to me. It was very nice and shiny and not rusted yet, like it does rust in many people, which is pretty horrifying. And she showed it to me, and she said, referring to the device, "What a waste." And that, to me, summed it up. You care more about this object than the sick person in front of you. You're telling me what a waste about this device. It said everything to me about the dynamic, this sick dynamic. So I suppose women's stories around the IUD is a site of a lot of gaslighting, but I think just as your story demonstrates, it's sort of everywhere. How to combat it, I don't think that there's anything any individual can do. Like I think that that's like a story that people have, like, about trying to get respect or to be heard in the doctor's office through maybe acting more professional or having somebody else come with you. You know, you could just try so many different things, but it's so much more systemic than that, that there's a lot of ways to fail at trying to remedy it individually. For me, I guess one of the things that I learned for myself in this process is that there's a lot of help and healing and community and collective wisdom happening outside of the medical profession. And I learned a lot about healing and what was going on with this IUD through things like online groups, where people really are gathering and conferring and being quite empirical about what's going on and how to work with it. So I have, personally for me, I have sort of detached, I have a detached relationship with the medical profession. I still have doctors and I take conventional medicine for my disease. So I'm not really off-roading it per se, but I feel like it has enhanced my life so greatly to understand that that is not like the big healing pot, that healing and thinking about, you know, health or well-being lives in a lot of other places besides in the doctor's office, which is really failing a lot of people.
Absolutely. And so what you experienced and are still experiencing is, an autoimmune disease that was triggered by the toxicity of the copper and the metals and the reaction within your body that became systemic. I mean, I don't understand exactly what happened there, but is that essentially what happened?
Well, yeah, I mean, it's hard. Yeah, what can I know for certain? But right. What I do know is that there's a real feeling, and this is across devices. This is, you know, this is what people are working on across devices, that metal devices cause local to systemic immunological response. So that's hard to wrap your mind around, that there's something embedded in one area in you, but it's not just making that area kind of like sore or inflamed or sick. There's something that it can do systemically. That is, you know, that local to systemic inflammatory, potentially toxic response is what I believe happened to me. I think that there's sort of, for me, there's like two threads about the IUD. There's the thread about inflammation, and then there's the thread about toxic, you know, like copper toxicity. And, you know, I don't know. I can only guess about what might have been the major trigger for me.
And the book is a way to continue this conversation, of course. And since it's being published, I would imagine it's created even more conversation. This is a book that's also a kind of, in a sense, a call to action, or, you know, or even a kind of activist gesture, right? I mean, it was did it bring in more stories to you and more experiences? What was the effect of the book being published in terms of your learning curve on all of this?
Yeah, that's a great question. And the book kind of, it references in its title, Blackfishing is a reference to this documentary that came out in 2013 called Blackfish, that kind of single-handedly took down SeaWorld. if you might have seen it. It was such a phenomenon when it came out, and everybody just sort of like saw it and realized, oh, we don't want those whales to be at SeaWorld anymore. Like, there's something wrong with that because of the way the documentary kind of expressed this problem. And so I knew I want to blackfish the IUD. I want to create a cultural phenomenon that makes people go, oh, we shouldn't put copper in our uterus, in our uteri. That might not go well. So I had a very, I had an activist spirit in writing it, absolutely. And since it's come out, I would say the majority of things that happen are that I get emails from people frequently telling me their negative stories, telling me, you know, this is a really helpful thing. This conferred to me what I almost like couldn't even articulate to myself, I sometimes hear, because we're just trained to believe this is a good device. So some people just say, well, I had some, I'm a freak. Something really negative happened to me, but I must just be so weird. And then there, you know, this like is a door to like, no, this is something that's going on. And, you know, many people just totally know that it's a problem, and we're just excited to read the book to confer it and keep saying it. Some people were really surprised. I can't help but say that my favorite communication is when people communicate with me and tell me they got theirs out. You know, this all said, I am a strong believer that anybody, and certainly any woman, should do whatever they want to do with their body. And I would never want to tell anybody to do anything with their body. But I, as somebody who was deeply wounded by this device, I cannot help but get a almost like a guttural feeling of glee when I hear that it's not in another person, because I am worried that it might hurt. It hurt them. So I'm always excited to hear that. And, you know, I also hear from people who totally contact me and say, that's interesting. I've had it in for a decade and I feel great. And it really has worked for me. So some people tell me that. And I just love every minute of it. It feels wonderful to just be having these conversations.
That's good to hear, and I do know the SeaWorld story, of course, and I hope that I like that idea, and that it can cause that kind of change in the world. Karen, I want to ask you one more question. What are you reading at the moment? I'm always curious.
Oh, yeah, that's such a great question. Well, I'm certainly somebody who has been inspired by the Black Lives Matter movement and have sort of taken up the call this summer to further my reading. Right now I'm reading this wonderful, really phenomenal book called Silencing the Past, Power and the Production of History, by Michel Rolf Triot, who is a Haitian scholar. This book talks about a couple different things, but really interestingly talks about the silencing of the Haitian slave rebellion and uprising and revolution, and how that amazingly unprecedented moment in the history of slavery is like really silenced in history, and really thinking about why and how such phenomenal and important moments get kind of covered over or woven into like sort of a totalizing silence. So I'm learning a little bit more about that, and it's a beautiful book.
Thank you for that. Karen, I want to thank you for talking with me today. It's really been fascinating, and readers, of course, have links in here for the book and more. I just want to thank you so much.
Thank you so much.
You're listening to Yale Radio WYBC. This is Brainerd Carey with the lives of the artists, architects, curators, and more.